Hi, my name is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand evidence-based holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. In my normal weekly episodes on Wednesday, I talk about the theory, methodologies and principles associated with investing. The aim of these case study episodes is to share how the application of that approach to formulating advice works out in real life situations. And in this case study, I want to talk about how property decisions often have major long-term consequences. And that's not only property decisions with respect to, you know, investment properties, but also in particular with owner-occupied properties, because the big difference there with owner-occupied properties is that the debt firstly isn't tax deductible. So we've got to repay it from after-tax dollars, which is costly. And secondly, eventually we want to repay all the debt against the home. And in particular, when we enter into retirement, we really don't want to have a home loan. And so, again, not only do we have to service the interest, but we've got to pay for the principal repayments, and we've got to plan for that in a long-term strategy. So property decisions are really important. And, you know, I'm really surprised at the financial planning industry that they haven't really fully embraced that. And thankfully, they are now, because, you know, commissions are no longer exist in investment products, which means that all advisors really don't have any conflicts of interest anymore. And as such, they're going to be forced to learn more about property and property-based decisions. But if we make some really good property-based decisions in our lifetime, that can have far-reaching consequences. And a lot of Australians have built substantial amount of wealth just investing in their own home, you know, in terms of their home equity. So let's talk about this case study then. These clients were in a bit of a quandary. They were living and working overseas. And the reason they wanted to do that was, there was a few reasons, but one of the main ones was they were living in a favorable income tax environment. They were getting paid a lot of money, more than what they would be paid for the same roles here in Australia. And they saw it as an opportunity to really get a financial head start, have the experience of living and working overseas, but also then earn a lot of income, put that to work. And hopefully by the time they return to Australia, which they expect in 7 or 8 years' time, they'll be in a much better position. And so the big decision for us was, do we go and buy a family home now? Something that they can return to and live in when they eventually come back to Australia to resolve for the rest of their life? Or do we buy an investment property instead of buying a home? Or in fact, do we not buy property at all? And so there's a few considerations that we had to take into account. On the face of it, you might think, oh, it's not too difficult decision, but there's a lot of moving parts. So firstly, borrowing capacity, particularly borrowing capacity whilst they're non-residents, and then borrowing capacity when they return home, because it's great to build a plan on today's income, but we know today's income isn't going to be around forever, that when they come back to Australia, they're going to have a lower income amount. So we need to think about that from a non-resident borrowing capacity credit perspective, but also from a cash flow perspective. Then the taxation consequences. As a non-tax resident, they don't get the 50% CGT discount. They can't utilize the main residence exemption, of course, because they're not living in the property. And so that has a big impact compared to, say, shares as a non-resident. If you have some shares as non-resident, you're not taxed on either the income or capital growth. And so that's a major difference between the two asset classes. Of course, if they don't go and buy the family home today, we know that if they wait 7 or 8 years, that family home is going to cost them a lot more money. And as I said in the introduction, we've got to pay for a home using after-tax dollars, which is incredibly costly. So if we don't go and buy the family home now, what will happen is they're going to return to Australia and they're going to be faced with a huge mortgage. And that mortgage will be so large that it's really going to suck out all cash flow and therefore not really allow them to invest in assets outside of the family home and therefore compromise a comfortable retirement. But if they went and bought an investment property, let's say, okay, let's not buy the family home, let's go and buy an investment property. We wanted to be really careful to make sure that they didn't go and borrow too much today. So then by the time they get back to Australia and their incomes are lower because obviously the employment opportunities aren't as attractive as they are overseas, that they will still have enough borrowing capacity left over in order to be able to buy a home. Because we can go and buy an investment property today and then just think, I will cross that bridge. But we don't want to be in a situation where we have to sell that property just because only after owning it for, say, 7 years, just because we don't have enough borrowing capacity. So that was a really important consideration in terms of how much are we going to invest if we do go down the investment property track. But of course, we don't want to set the budget too low, because if you set the budget too low, you potentially compromise on the quality of that asset. And most importantly, you know, we can do all this planning up front, but things like borrowing capacity, interest interest rates, these sorts of things can change over time. So what if we do go and buy an investment property now and we do have to sell it in 7 years' time? We certainly, you know, it's a relatively short ownership period. We want to buy a particular type of property and target a particular, you know, locality or type that gives us the greatest opportunity to at least be able to walk away and make a reasonable return. And we certainly don't want to lose money in that situation. So it was in sort of another factor. And then if we don't do the home and we don't do the investment property, what else do we do? And obviously the obvious answer there is some share investing. And when you're comparing those two strategies, it's completely different because you're typically comparing a strategy with a lot of gearing, which is the property one, to shares maybe with some gearing at best, but certainly not to the level of property. So, you know, they're not going to financially, when you compare them, of course the property one's going to look better because it's got the gearing, but then you've got all those other negative attributes around the CGT consequences and affording to buy a family home and those sorts of things. So I've got to say, this strategy was probably one of the more challenging strategies I've worked on over the past couple of years. You need to have good knowledge around property and property markets, investment fundamentals, you know, picking the property types to make sure you mitigate the risk in case you do need to sell relatively quickly. You need to be all over taxation rules, so not only the rules that apply to residents, but also, and most importantly, the rules that apply to non-residents. You needed some, obviously, traditional financial planning expertise in terms of working out how it all sort of molds together, and longer term, then once they make these decisions, you know, how will they fund retirement? You know, how do we get money into super? All those sorts of things, because people working overseas typically aren't contributing into super, so that's a challenge. And then you had to financial model all those sorts of things out. So it was a really complex, it really strained my brain, this one, but it was a really good example of how these property decisions are really so important. And I never want to come across sort of stating the obvious in these podcasts as sort of arrogant or obnoxious or anything like that. But really, the reality is that there are very few advisors that would be able to work on this sort of strategy. You really needed a team effort, because if you think about it, accountants aren't going to really know a lot about property. I mean, they might know a little bit of property, but probably not much about borrowings. A mortgage broker will probably have some property exposure, but certainly won't have the financial planning and tax consequences. And planners can tend to know a little bit about borrowing, but certainly very little about property. And as I said in my opening, it's a real blight on the financial planning industry. So you really needed that well-rounded team. But the most important thing I wanted to leave you with is an example of how property-based decisions, and particularly how are we going to buy a home and own a home debt-free one day before retirement? How does that sort of filter in or factor into the strategy? Because it is a really important consideration. And buying well, so that is buying a home that is going to deliver you a lot of capital gains tax-free growth, is also a really good plan B, because we don't use the equity to fund retirement, of course. We hope we don't need to, but it's a great plan B if everything else goes wrong. If all you do is make a great property decision for your family home, you know, could be well rewarded for that. Anyway, I thought it was a really good case study to share with you today. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, leave a rating or a review, or go tell someone about this case study episode if you think they're going to get some value from it. It'd be greatly appreciated. And until tomorrow, bye for now.